Good morning. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Representative Hornstein, and we have several very important bills on our agenda today. I don't see Representative Abler yet. I understand that he's in a conference committee. I'll be heading over at some point. I know we have a big group from Anoka County here, but what I'd like to do until Representative Abler gets here is to start with House File 222, Representative Isaacson. This is the Rice Street 694 interchange funding request, and I believe this is also a bonding request. Is that correct?
It is not at this point.
It is what?
Not.
It is not. Okay.
Nope.
So then I will move that House File 222 be considered for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill.
Sounds good.
That's the motion before us. And I'll just remind members of the committee and the audience that on bonding bills, we are just doing informational hearings and making later recommendations to the capital investment. But this is not in that category, so we will...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This comes out of the TED fund, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So so we'll just lay this over for possible inclusion. You can proceed, Representative Isaac.
Thank you. What we have here is a bridge, Mr. Chair, that's been built in the 50s, has been functionally obsolete for almost 20 years. It is a sticking point if you look at the 694 corridor and the push to put the 694 and 494 into three lanes. There are fundamentally several reasons why this bridge needs to be addressed, and I have several testifiers I'm going to ask to come down in a second, but I just want to walk you through a little bit of the history. One of the county commissioners has, and I have to get my hands on it, and I had a copy of it. It's a letter promising that this bridge would be rectified and fixed by 1999. It was promised again that this bridge would be taken care of by the Department of Transportation by 2004. Still hasn't happened. If you look at a map of 694 and 494, you'll see, and do we have those maps with us here? Are they out there? Okay. You'll see, thank you, that if on the to the left going, so if you started at 35W and went all the way across 694 to White Bear Avenue, almost every single, about every single inch has been covered except this portion of the interstate. And what's happening is we have six lanes draining into two lanes, and it creates a bottleneck at this bridge. And the reason why this bridge is a sticking point is it's one of the bridges that does not or is not capable of being widened at this point. So it needs to be replaced. And that would also go along with the stretch of highway in that spot as well. We've done the planning, and what we're asking for is the money to do the pre-construction and get that ready. And then I'm going to come back and bond for the actual replacing of the road and the bridge. So I just wanted to give you a little background on that and why it's so vitally important, especially to business interests. I'd like to invite the Commissioner, Mary Jo McGuire, and you come on down.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to the Capitol Complex, Commissioner McGuire.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Chair, to be back at the Capitol Complex, and I am honored to share the table here with my colleagues, and it's great to be here with Representative Isaacson and to see all of you here on the committee, and it's great to see you, Mr. Chair.
Just remind everybody to state their name and their position for our record, and we'll proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Commissioner Mary Jo McGuire, Ramsey County Commissioner. And we appreciate your time this morning to listen to our proposal for our I-694 Rice Street interchange. This is a priority for the Ramsey County Board. It is going to help us with the traffic congestion and the in the area that we want to develop and help us with the area that's up in the TCAP property, and we have people here that are going to testify, and I'm going to stand for questions, but I'm just here to support this as a member of the board and to let you know that the board is has this as one of their priorities. So we have Jim Tolis here from the County Public Works, and he's going to explain the project, and then we have Mayor Sandy Martin from Shoreview, where this is located.
Jim Tolis, Director of Public Works for Ramsey County. Do you all have the graphic that was, I believe, provided ahead of the meeting?
Yes.
This particular graphic is actually from the environmental assessment work that MnDOT did back in 2005, so this project's been on the radar for a very long time. As Representative Isaacson pointed out, this is a major bottleneck along that strip of 694, where you had 35E and 694 traffic loading up at one particular location. MnDOT has actually embarked upon many improvements along this entire corridor, not the least of which was the UNWEAVE project that was completed in about 2007. They just completed the unbonded overlay east of the UNWEAVE section all around the east side of the county. They have just let a contract for the Cayuga interchange on 35E. They'll be embarking on MnPass improvements this fall. They have completed a new interchange on Maryland. The portion of 694 west of Lexington was under construction last year. It will be completed this year. And we have a grade separation on US 10 just north of 694. If you add all those up, they're in excess of $450 million worth of investment being made in this corridor. And the full potential and benefit of that cannot be realized without eliminating the pinch point at Rice Street and the first 2 miles of 694 to the west. So this is a very important segment that just appears to have been left out of the mix. It's like a missing link in all of this incredible investment that they've been made, and I praise MnDOT for making those investments. The pavement condition on 694 through that section is also failing, and as we're all well aware of the pothole situation this spring, the roadway itself is starting to fall apart. And so aside from the congestion factor, the condition through that section is very poor. Ramsey County has been promoting this for many years. Trunk Highway 49 came back on our system as a turnback in 2001, and there was a strong commitment made at that time to have improvements completed on the interchange and also along 694. Because of UNWEAVE and other projects stepping in and taking priority, this project has never bubbled to the top, and it currently is not programmed, and we feel it's time to get this thing updated for the environmental documentation and the final design put together, and then hopefully it'd be coupled with a lane add on 694. So.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sandy Martin. I have served as mayor of Shoreview for the past 16 years, and I can tell you that this bridge and this work has been on my agenda all 16 of those years. And I rarely come down here to visit you, partly because Shoreview is very self-sufficient. We do not receive any state aid, but we have a problem now that we really need the state's assistance with. And that problem has been there for the last 16 years, as I mentioned. In 2001, when we were promised these improvements by 2004, Shoreview initiated a task force with our neighboring communities, with Little Canada and Badness Heights. And we met for about 10 months, I believe, with MnDOT, with Ramsey County, with Met Council. And we planned for that intersection and how we could address it. And in fact, Shoreview participated in a loan program with the Met Council, so we actually purchased the 12 acres of land that the county public works facility had been sitting on. That was meant to be a very short-term loan. It turned out to be a 12-year loan. And so we basically have been holding that property to prevent any kind of unwanted development in the area, to allow the interchange to occur when we're ready. And so that's why I'm here today, because this is really an important issue. It isn't just an issue that's important to our residents. It is a congestion issue that affects everybody. But in that two-mile segment, in that two-mile corridor, there's over 25,000 jobs. We have not just Deluxe, we have Land O'Lakes, we have Cummins Power Generation, all located in that corridor. And they all tell us in our visits to the CEOs of these companies that their number one complaint and their number one problem in the area is access in and out during rush hour onto 694 at this point, and because of the Rice Street Bridge. So this is really a matter that affects jobs, it affects our businesses, and I just felt compelled to come down here and share with you the urgency of this issue, and I certainly appreciate Representative Isaacson's understanding and appreciation of that urgency. He lives very close to this area, so he's personally affected, as are many of us. But thank you very much for the time, and I strongly urge inclusion of this piece in the transportation funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Martin. Are there... Representative Isaacson, did you want to add anything?
I just really want to point out that we're really looking at three things here. The changing and modernizing 694, taking a bridge that's over 50 years old and functionally obsolete, and then also serving a very strong and very fast, robust, growing business interest that exists in my area. There is a ton of business that I see the construction going on all the time as they are growing and adding jobs. And this is going to be fundamentally important to making sure that they can continue to thrive in that area, not just for the idea of the workers getting back and forth, but also transportation needs of those businesses as well. And I really want you to take a second to look at this particular graph. If everybody could look at this real quick. There's a road on here that we're seeing when we come down here and we go around and then come back up through here. The traffic backs up to here right now. So when you come down, the people leaving work from over here will be waiting in line to go on this road here to exit onto Owosso, to exit onto Rice, to get on the interstate. And if they're going that way, right, they're going to be sitting in line here forever because it's already backed up past, because this is the bottleneck we're talking about. And so it's important to really visualize that these folks are sitting every night after work, sometimes up to a half an hour in this area. And I really want to make sure that we are thinking about that. This is an area that it has all kinds of positive implications for what it can provide, but one of the most important things is a real job-friendly environment. And I think that's just essential. So I wanted to add that piece.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson, and thank you for your strong panel and strong presentation to the committee today. We have a question from Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually more of a comment. And it's nice to see a legislator that kind of tries to hide where he really is. two things. This would really cry out for, with that kind of traffic going through, it really does kind of cry out for some of the heavy rail heading up and cutting down on some of this congestion in this particular area. But one of the things that maybe the committee does or doesn't know is that up at the Highway 10, 694, now that particular area has just had three out of the four corners of that intersection have just been redone and brought in a whole bunch of new businesses, and a number of them are expanding up there. So it's just that whole area is kind of exploding in terms of growth. And if we can ever clean up the TCAP site, might be another story, but we're not going to go there today. So this is actually a pretty good project, and it does look for the future.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a number of comments and questions from the committee. So
I'm very excited.
We'll start with Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Isaacson, I appreciate your passion on all this. And you know, you talked about how this was promised in 2004. And, you know, when we were debating the 2008 transportation bill, I was one of the veto overriders. And I can, like I said, appreciate your passion. And I had letters and newspaper articles that promised our neck of the wood that the four-lane project would be completed in 1973. And, you know, the bottlenecks don't cause delays in our areas. They cause death, whether it's Highway 60 or Highway 14. And so the needs are great. Mm-hmm. And so, Mr. Chairman, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to serve on this committee as well, and to, you know, figure out ways to invest in the infrastructure, whether it's promoting business and speed up the commutes to work, and et cetera. But I just guess that was more of a comment. I appreciate your passion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, and Representative Isaacson, that's a pretty big, important vote of confidence because Representative Hamilton's been one of our strongest transportation voices over the years in the legislature. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Isaacson, I just wanted to say I've been stuck on that bridge before. And aside from me being supportive of the project for that reason, I figured when two of the chairs of my committees that I serve on and your wife's a ranger, and
as
also
never failed to tell me, yes,
Representative Urusso has range roots.
Yes.
So obviously I have to support this.
Thank you.
And we see that Representative Metza has now really understood truly what it means to be an Iron Range legislator.
He never stops reminding us, sir.
I think it's the deadlines that are approaching that have gotten the committee a little punchy today, but that's a good thing. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and this is probably more for the chair who may know this information. I've seen from research saying that there were bills presented last biennium to deal with design of this. Did they get passed on? Did they get started, and where would that process be?
I'm not familiar specifically. I don't see Representative Beard, but I think that we last year we didn't have very many specific projects, and it's sort of a broader issue about specific projects being in bills. This falls under the TED program. I'm glad you asked the question because I had been meaning to make this point. This falls under the TED program. Representative Mahoney is familiar with that. That's a competitive grant-making, criteria-driven process. So the legislature, I think, has been loath to kind of earmark projects. But, the fact that we have this panel here that's making such a strong presentation before the committee, I mean, I'm sure that will get the attention of people who are involved in this. And so, we're going to have to think through carefully as a committee how we do this. It's not unprecedented that specific corridors or projects are given money, but it is rare. And so, my guess is that we didn't, and maybe some of the panelists from Ramsey County can confirm this, but I don't think there was money set aside for this last year. Okay. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I want to thank you for bringing up, the great things that are happening in the area and the economic development impact of that. I do want to let you know that Ramsey County is cleaning up the TCAP site, so it is going to be to residential standards, and that there's really needed funding for the infrastructure around it. And we've heard that on the committee before, but I just want to emphasize making it in the 21st century, making a 21st century infrastructure rather than 1950s for an ammunition plant. And then secondly, are there any other tools in the toolbox that we can use besides the TED money for something like this so that we just make sure that we have that covered in this hearing today?
Thank you, Representative Murray. Interesting that you raised that. I think a number of you, and I've said actually before this committee, and we're going to hopefully come forward with a specific bill with some specific language for this committee to react to. But I have been very concerned over the years. It's to the point that Representative Hamilton made earlier, is that we have a number of very important corridors that are commercial corridors that always seem to be delayed or not make their way into the State Transportation Improvement Program. Because having served on this committee for so long and having heard these presentations over the years, year after year after year, Highway 60 is an example, Highway 14, as you mentioned, I really feel that we need to get creative about this and figure out a way that these projects can get funded. And so I've been working with some stakeholders to develop a concept that I'm calling corridors of commerce. This certainly would be one. And I've asked MnDOT whether, in fact, this interchange could potentially qualify, and they do believe it would. But that's going to require us getting some additional revenue. So this is going to be, I hope, an important part of our bill this year. This would certainly be another way to try to get this going in addition to the TED funding. So, this wasn't scripted, but I'm glad you asked the question. And I like talking about corridors of commerce because I think it's an important concept that we don't deal with enough. And, you know, we have the Wilmer to St. Cloud problem and, you know, and Highway 10, which we're going to hear about later today. So I hope that we can take some action this year and start to, you know, ease the bottleneck of projects that we have. And Ms. Nelson also travels this and sort of pulled me aside and said, this is really bad. So we have a lot of support, I think, for what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions? Yes, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always have some concern when we begin tinkering with the queue, so to speak, you know, what's in the STIP. And I was wondering if possibly if MnDOT could maybe give us some information, you know, if we didn't approve this, and it was is the urgency that you all seem to think it is, and you make a great case, where would this project fall? What are we talking about in terms of completion?
Representative Isaacson?
I'm happy to have MnDOT as well. I would tell you that right now it is unallotted. There's no immediate plans. It's recognized. If you look on their website, it is not in the current queue of things that are even being pushed that I know of, unless something's changed or I misread the website. And so, is that a fair statement?
Mr. Peterson's nodding, I believe.
So as I just a question in terms of follow-up. I mean, isn't it on a 10-year, 20-year? I mean, if we're at a point where we have a committee, a panel here today making testimony that it's urgent, kind of hard to believe that it's not on somebody's plan for a 10 or 20-year project. And
Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
From
Chairman.
MnDOT.
My name is Scott Peterson from MnDOT, and Representative Benson, to your question. I think the statement that was made just a minute ago is a pretty accurate reflection. We're certainly aware of the need in that location and the chronic backups that occur at the Rice Street, in the Rice Street area. But as I think probably the committee is becoming increasingly aware, there are a number of demands throughout the system in the metro area. Basically, these funds would all come from the same allocation of funds that goes to improve the transportation system in the metro area. So exactly where this project is on the schedule, I don't know for sure. It's certainly an improvement that we would like to make, and the sooner the better. But again, you know, given all the competing needs in the region, I think right now it's nowhere in the near future.
So thank you, Mr. Peterson. And you know, again, this is again, I'll repeat, a case study of I think what some of the problems are that we have in terms of, it's not just an abstract issue. We talk about need and available revenue, and so you know, this is you know, a case study, and why I'm trying to work to, you know, this is, it falls into that hole
right.
of an important project, but for various reasons, not included in the STIP, and we need to find a way to address this. So we'll have one last question on or comment on this House file from Chairman Earhart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comment is in general. If we had everybody lined up that has a project that is extremely important, we would have a line longer than they had for the gun bill or the mayor's amendment, because there are that many projects and we're not providing the money for them. So as important as this project is, as important as everyone at this table who has a project that's important, if you want to see that done, then we're going to have all of those projects done. Then we're going to have to go to the governor's suggested task force on finance and raise gas tax 10 cents and then up to 40 cents in the next 20 years, and then we won't have enough. So make up your minds that we need more money if we want to satisfy this stuff. Instead of Representative Benson saying that this is important, of course it's important, but so is everybody else's project that they've got on mind. So let's understand that. There ain't enough money now, but we can get more and get some of them done, but maybe not all of them. So then there is a line. Thank you.
Thank you. One last quick comment, we'll have to move on to the
next. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that, and certainly I had no desire to put the Department of Transportation on the spot. I recognize that there are several options, projects that need to be funded, and that, you know, there's infinite needs and finite abilities to take care of those needs. I think that, you know, obviously I'm going to advocate for my area because this is an area that really needs help, and I would be doing my job
Absolutely.
If I didn't. And I want to point out that one of the fundamental things that's important when we talk about commercial corridors is that the better we do at helping those areas grow, especially in business, the more we're able to bring in tax revenue, the more we're able to grow our economy and grow the budget we need to pay for these things. So I think when you're prioritizing, think about that, that as a place that's going to help continue to grow jobs, we're going to continue to grow our economy that way, and that just has exponential benefit effects, and that would be, you know, one of the many pitches for that.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, panel members. Thank you, Representative Isaacson. So this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we have, I think what I'd like to do, we have an all points bulletin issued for Representative Abler, but I do want to take this bill now because I want to leave enough time for the Southwest Corridor, because I know we're going to have a lot of questions about that and a lot of testifiers. So Representative Bernardi will sit at the table as a pinch hitter, as a Anoka County legislator for Representative Abler. And both House File 376 and House File 1375 both relate to bonding. So just to refresh everybody's memory, what we're doing in this committee on bonding is holding informational hearings. Informational hearings only. We will not take action, but what is custom and usage in this committee on transportation bonding bills is that we gather up all of the bills and then forward a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. And, of course, we have our chair here, and so she's hearing all of these bills as well. And so what I'd like to do is introduce Representative Bernardi, and she'll kind of direct traffic here for our panel. So I see Mayor Stroman and Mr. Fisher. So it sounds like we're going to do House File 376 first. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Fisher. You have been a frequent guest of ours over the years, and I haven't seen you for a little while, so it's good to see you again.
I see you, Mr.
Mr. Representative Bernardi.
Mr. Chair and members, I would like just to introduce these bills just real briefly. I work collaboratively with Representative Abler on a lot of things here at the legislature, particularly schools and also transportation. This is, and I wish Representative Hamilton was here because we too in the metro share his concern. We have a lot of deaths on our roadways in the metro area, and in fact, along this corridor, we've just recently had a death of a young person crossing the road, and in addition to other ones. So this is a really important bill to move traffic through this corridor of commerce, as you would say, and it affects people throughout Anoka County and people that are commuting to the metro area and trying to get out of that metro area to enjoy the weekend. So thank you for being here, and I'll pass it over to Mayor Stroman and Doug Fisher.
Okay, thank you to both of you, and I will try, if we can get through this bill in about 15 minutes or so again, because I want to leave ample time for the Southwest Corridor. Speaking of, we have ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School. Welcome. I know we have, yes, let's clap. Let's clap. I'm not sure how long you all will be sticking around, but we do have an issue that I think is of particular interest to St. Louis Park coming up later on our agenda. Mayor, welcome. Good to see you again as well.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It is our pleasure to be here. My name is Sarah Stroman. I'm the mayor of the city of Ramsey. And I'm going to just provide a brief overview. Our presentation is actually going to be in a few parts here this morning. Following my brief intro will be Mr. Doug Fisher, the highway engineer for Anoka County. He's going to present the particulars of our project and the need for this project. Councilmember Jason Tosse, who represents Ramsey's 3rd Ward, which is traversed end-to-end by Highway 10, is going to talk particularly about the public safety aspect and I think provide a pretty effective demonstration of the problem that we face. And then Mr. Bob Benke from North Metro Mayors is just going to provide very brief comments on a regional perspective. I would also like to note that we also have our city administrator, Mr. Kurt Ulrich, here, and council member John Letourneau here with us, providing moral support here today. Just very, very briefly, as a way of introduction, Highway 10 has long been a priority for the city of Ramsey. In fact, I think it's probably one of the few policies that has remained consistent from council to council over the last 10 years. And it's important really to the city of Ramsey for two reasons. One is an economic development reason. Simply put, we cannot attract businesses and jobs into our community if we cannot move people in and out of the city. This intersection at Highway 10 and Armstrong in particular is essential to the success of our several hundred acre multi-use core at Ramsey development, which lies just east of the Armstrong interchange. And that site is also the home of our North Star Rail. And so having this interchange upgraded so that we have safe access not only is important to the success of the development we have there, but important to providing transportation options to people throughout the North Metro. The second reason has to do with public safety, and as Representative Bernardi noted, the consequences of not fixing Highway 10 unfortunately have been the loss of lives and several lives there. And so I think it's really renewed a sense of urgency to act and act very soon on Highway 10. And I will let Councilmember Tosi provide some more information on that, and I think give a very effective demonstration of the problem. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Fisher to provide the details of this project.
Thank you. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's great to be back in front of the committee. And being the engineer that I am, I would like to talk a little bit about the technical attributes of this project.
Excuse me, just please state your name for the record.
My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County Highway Engineer.
Thank you.
I do have a handout that I'm going to be going through very quickly here, but I just want to highlight some of the issues with this. And again, I'm here today testifying on behalf of the entire Anoka County Board of Commissioners, who is strongly in support of this project. I'm just going to go through page 2, the who, what, why, where. This bill has already been heard in the Senate and has been referred on, and was received very favorably at the Senate, so that's the status of the bill in the Senate. What is our project? What we are looking at is removing an at-grade signalized intersection on Highway 10 at Armstrong Boulevard in the city of Ramsey in Anoka County. What is unique about our corridor is that we have the Mississippi River on the south side of Highway 10, and we have the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad track, dual track main line, just immediately to the north of Highway 10. The at-grade signal right now, the traffic lanes are only 45 feet away from the railroad tracks. So it makes this at-grade intersection very, very problematic. Our proposed project will remove the signal, build a grade separated interchange at that location. What makes this unique is because of proximity of the railroad tracks just to the north of Highway 10, we have to squeeze an off-ramp and an on-ramp in that small little area. So it requires numerous retaining walls, plus our bridge has to go over the railroad, which makes it higher than a standard highway overpass. So whenever you make an interchange unique, it only means one thing: it gets more expensive. And so that's why we're here seeking your help and support. We have made local improvements in this area already. On this drawing, the areas in the purple and the green have already been completed. Actually, the intersection right next to the green and purple area has also been completed. We actually built that intersection tipped up in anticipation of the bridge going up and over the railroad track. So if you drive out there right now, you see an intersection kind of on a little hump in the road. It was done that way on purpose. We weren't bad engineers. We did that in anticipation of this interchange in the future. Where are we again? We're on the western side of Highway 10, and this is one of the fastest growing corridors in the United States, not just in Minnesota. Unfortunately, the freeway section of Highway 10 ends in Coon Rapids, the city of Coon Rapids, And we have 5 signalized intersections, 2 in Anoka, 3 in Ramsey, that we are moving for eliminating and creating the freeway here. This is one of those interchange projects that we're talking about today. If you're not totally familiar with where Highway 10 is, because I know the committee members are from all over the state, if you go up north, you probably on a Friday night been stuck on Highway 10, or on Sunday evening coming back, you've been stuck on Highway 10. So you might know what I'm talking about there. But really, when we look at this corridor on the corners of the metro area, it's very similar to I-35E. It's very similar to Highway 52. It's very similar to Highway 212. What's different about our corridor is those other corridors have very similar traffic volumes, the 30 to 70,000 ADT. On the outside, it's 30,000. On the inside, 70,000, just like our corridor. But our corridor has signals. If you drive on 52 or 35E or 212, just imagine what that corridor would be like if you had signals instead of interchanges. That's the problem that we have. And I just wanted to go over that just for a little perspective if you're not totally familiar with that. Again, our number one priority for this is safety, but it does meet, we have emergency response issues, mobility issues, bike ped issues, and economic development issues. Safety, this is an engineer's dream. It's a crash diagram. Actually, it's an engineer's nightmare of a crash diagram. When you look at the other corridors that are freeway sections compared to our section, the crash rate and the severity rate of our corridor is 4 to 5 times higher than 212, than 35E, than 52. Why? They have freeway sections. They don't have those conflicts that our highway has. So really, when you look at and compare this to similar traffic volume corridors, ours is much more crash prone. Emergency response. The large majority of the city of Ramsey and Anoka County lie on the north side of the railroad tracks. Mercy Hospital, which is on the south side of the railroad tracks. Anytime we have a, so the railroad tracks and the congestion on Highway 10 actually create a barrier for emergency response. And Councilmember Tosi will be showing you a video exactly how that impacts, so I won't talk too much about that here. It's not just a safety thing, it's a mobility thing. We have huge congestion on this corridor. Again, if you go up north on the weekend, going up, coming back, you've sat in it, you experienced that. But our motorists, our commuters to the Twin Cities, have that nightmare every single day, Monday through Friday, in the morning, in the afternoon.
Mr. Fisher, I would just ask if you could wrap up shortly, because I didn't know we had a video, and I'd like to see that and hear from the council member. And then I will say, you know, I know we have at least one comment or question from a member about this bill, but I'm going to just be very clear. At 10:50, we're going to start the Southwest Corridor conversation. Right. So if you could
plan
your time accordingly.
I appreciate the two-minute warning. One point I have to stress is this corridor is very poor for bike and pedestrian accommodations. We heard Representative Bernardi talk about fatalities. In the last 6 months, we had 4 pedestrian fatalities on this corridor. You might have seen the last one was a 16-year-old girl leaving her job at McDonald's crossing the highway, was killed on Highway 10. This is a significant problem. There are at-grade crossings, pedestrian crossings at the signals, but the corridor is 175 feet across. You cannot cross on one signal timing. So you have to go halfway, get stranded out in the median, press the button, do it again. And when the green time is in excess of 2-3 minutes on Highway 10, you're standing stranded. What do? They lose patience. They go. They either don't cross at signals or they cross when it's a very unsafe situation. So I'll just wrap up with that. Other than, Mr. Chair, we appreciate your comments that the committee only on rare occasions has appropriated money for a specific project. We would love if you would break that tradition and do that for this project. Certainly do that. But I will say that the TED program in the past, we were told that this project was number 2 on the TED solicitation, but you only funded the TED pot big enough for one project. You know, right. So if you are going to program and bond for programs like TED for your corridors of commerce. Please fund those robustly. We feel that we have a competitive project, and we'd love to compete for those funds and those programs.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. And I think the fact that we've had these fatalities, and this has been in the news, and the Star Tribune actually did an editorial specifically about Highway 10, there's a compelling case made. Council member, if you could be brief, because we have one additional testifier, Mr. Young, that we need to get to, and we have 5 minutes left.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for
Jason Tosi, Ramsey council member. Just real briefly, since I was elected and sworn in, I've been bugging Representative Abler about this. I think he might be out getting a restraining order on me right now. So just to let you know, I am a police officer, and this has been my number one priority. And I'm going to show you a video that shows how this intersection is significant to our first responders in Ramsey. What we're going to see here is an accident that, of course, is at Highway 10 and Sunfish. But what you'll see here is that our officers cannot get to this and ensure that the scene is safe. And if we go ahead, and do we have audio on that video?
I'll try and put the microphone down.
County Highway Department have expressed safety concerns about West Highway.
Let's see if we can reboot
over the city.
We have infrastructure issues here too.
That's how slow the traffic moves.
City of Ramsey and
you're going the opposite direction.
The City of Ramsey and the Anoka County Highway Department have expressed safety concerns about U.S. Highway 10 over the years. Highway 10 crosses the City of Ramsey for over 5 miles on the south side of the city from border to border. Highway 10 is an expressway with multiple entry, exit, and access points. Approximately 41,000 vehicles travel this highway each day. There are currently 3 intersections that are controlled by semaphores: Armstrong Boulevard, Ramsey Boulevard, and Sunfish Lake Boulevard. Since 2004, the City of Ramsey, in cooperation with Anoka County, has spent $4 million of city funds to make improvements to these intersections. Over the past 5 years, there have been 686 accidents on this stretch of highway. The City of Ramsey, Anoka County, and MnDOT have worked hard to get access points and unsafe median crossovers closed. Using funds from the Revolving Acquisition and Loan Fund, the City has acquired several properties along Highway 10 in order to eliminate access. The ultimate goal is to have grade separation at all 3 intersections that are currently controlled and make Highway 10 a freeway similar to the freeway that runs through Coon Rapids. The separation would include the Burlington Northern Railroad tracks that run parallel to the highway. These tracks currently run between 65 and 70 trains per day. On July 29, 2011, at 7:51 p.m., a 3-vehicle accident occurred at the busy intersection of Highway 10 and Sunfish Lake Boulevard. Approximately 9,500 vehicles use Sunfish Lake Boulevard each day. The accident was caught on tape by a MnDOT traffic management camera. 2 vehicles are seen entering Highway 10 from Sunfish Lake Boulevard. These 2 vehicles are then broadsided by a westbound vehicle. The westbound vehicle was traveling at approximately 60 miles per hour when the accident occurred. Immediately following the accident, passing motorists can be seen running to the aid of the crash victims while waiting for emergency personnel to arrive. Many of these people can be seen stepping into the path of oncoming traffic, while another individual can be seen smoking in the area of the severely damaged vehicles while flammable liquids are plainly in sight. The need to get emergency personnel on site is critical, not just for the victims, but also for the safety of the accident scene. The first police squad arrives with the ambulance within 5 minutes of the accident. Both of these vehicles came from Anoka on Highway 10. At 7:56 p.m., 3 Ramsey squads can be seen stranded on the north side of the railroad tracks waiting for a train to pass. The 3 emergency vehicles were forced to wait 1 minute and 40 seconds while the train passed before they were allowed to get through to the scene and administer aid to the injured parties. Another squad waited at Ramsey Boulevard for the same eastbound train to pass before it could proceed to the accident. This accident only partially blocked the highway. However, traffic was backed up for miles in a matter of minutes. As a result of this accident, 5 people were hospitalized, including 2 that were in critical condition. 3 ambulances were needed, to transport the victims to the hospital. This is only one example of the type of hazards Ramsey experiences with the rail line going entirely through our community. The trains frequently stop, blocking the road for lengthy periods of time. The same safety concern applies to ambulances traveling to aid residents on the north side of the railroad track as it does to those transporting the ill or injured from the north side of the tracks to Mercy Hospital's emergency room.
And as you can see, Mr. Chair, this is clearly a significant safety issue, and I hope that it just speaks for itself, and I would welcome Mr. Banky from the Martha Metro Mayors to come up.
Thank you. You know, we are running short of time, so what I'd like to do is, I know we have two comments from members of the committee, Representative Houseman, Representative Mahoney, and there's a testifier who signed up ahead of time, Mr. Young, and I'd like to get Mr. Young's testimony. I'm going to give this three more minutes, so if people can make their comments, their testimony quickly, and then a couple minutes more for members, but we really do need to get going, so... Mr. Young, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Young with Arbor Commercial Group. I own a shopping center at the southwest quadrant of this intersection called Ramsey Commons. I believe you all have the brochure of the shopping center in your packet. When this interchange is built, it's going to take away all of my visibility because it's going to be 25 feet or so, 20 feet above, right next to my shopping center. It's going to take away the access that I have to the signalized intersections, but they, on the plan, do not show them compensating me for the loss of my shopping center. And what I would like is assurances from the county and the city that they will condemn my shopping center, as they are a number of the properties right around me, because it's not going to be a shopping center anymore. It's going to be something else. I don't know what it's going to be. But I'm a small business owner, and I'm looking for compensation for my loss.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Okay, Mr. Banky, if you can just keep it to a minute, and then I'm going to get to the two members that have requested to talk, and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bob Enke. I'm here in my capacity as Director of Research and Advocacy Services for the North Metro Mayors Association. That association includes cities from Circle Pines, Lexington on the east to Maple Grove and Andover on the west, including the cities of Anoka and Ramsey. We would like to support that project request. We have many others, but this is a critical corridor for all of us. You've heard the testimony, you've heard the justification. We encourage your support, and we would heartily endorse Representative Earhart's earlier motion to significantly increase funding, because as you all know, we have projects throughout the North Metro area as well as others, and we would request that you support this project as well as Representative Earhart's efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Banky. And just a reminder, members, you have some electronic device that's inadvertently on. Switch it to off at this time with our microphone situation. Okay, I have a. I know that Representative Houseman has a comment, and I believe Representative Mahoney would like to speak as well. Let's keep it short, and then we'll move on to the southwest quarter. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a very quick question for Mr. Fisher. If we sufficiently funded local road bonding, would this be a qualifying project without earmarking?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, the local road improvement program you're referring to is great. It generally does not fund projects to this type of level. Once we divvy the money between the metro and the outstate, and it carves up, it's usually in the $1 million, $2 million that Anoka County would receive through that program, which is great, and we'll do great projects with that. But this is a $35 million project, so it wouldn't fund the gap. We are looking with federal and local money to do about half of that project, but still, that's a pretty big funding deal.
And then, Mr. Chair, just a comment and maybe request, whenever we get to the point of discussing the funding bills, which may include gas tax increases, my understanding from MnDOT, because we've been talking about bonding for the local road issue, is that the local road issue has gotten so big that even if we passed a gas tax increase, given the formula for local governments, that probably wouldn't be sufficient, and that we really couldn't step away from some of the GO bonding we do for local roads as well. And that just by request, I guess, when we get to that discussion, is that a correct understanding? Because that's how big it seems to me that local road issue has gotten.
Thank you for raising that, Representative Houseman. The last comment on this or question on this bill from the committee will be from Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I keep hearing people bring up the TED funding. And TED funding is, as it was explained to me, is for economic development. Small dollars, not big projects, for a cut-in or a semaphore or whatever, but it's not for big bridges, not to plan them, not to do anything else. It is small things for a shopping center inlet, cut-in, or whatever. Having said that, you know, I'm a little upset with this particular project. I'm upset at Anoka County. Because last night I get three phone calls from friends of mine, labor union members that live in my district, or not live in my district, live up in Anoka, and actually I've worked with over the past. And apparently, one of your county commissioners, when they called to ask why prevailing wage was removed from county Anoka County's prerequisites, said, well, we removed it because labor union members are lazy. Have you heard him say this? Representative Abel, this question for you. Have you heard him say that? Because if that's the case, then these are men that I've worked with for 25 years. So I'm a little upset, and I want to understand why you want me to help you do something when he insults me, calls me lazy. And I think there's three or four other union members on this particular committee.
I know.
So why are we lazy, and the people in Anoka County who won't tax themselves to do some of this stuff after putting out a resolution opposing the governor's transit tax? I mean, I don't get it. I appreciate your courage to come here, but please explain.
Do you want to go back to the conference committee, Representative Abler?
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Representative Abler respond to Representative Mahoney, and then we're going to move on. And I'm glad you're here because you're the author of these two bills.
Thank you.
I appreciate your taking time. You're doing important work on that conference.
Well, and thank you. And I'm sorry I'm late. I just it's been an interesting. I do want to go back to the contentious.
We'd like a brief answer, and then you'll be released.
Let me just really capsulize. The reason I put the one bill in was to see the whole comprehensive thing, and I'm going to get to your thing. So the widening, four intersections, then Highway 10 is done as far as the Northwest Metro is concerned. So you see a comprehensive package. And it's not about one commissioner. It's for 300,000 people live out that way. And I'm going to get to him. And then the part about Ramsey is all about safety and people not dying. And unfortunately, the same man represents the city of Ramsey. Inappropriate spokesperson does not determine the value of a project. That's my one statement. The second is I supported prevailing wage. And I think it's important. I think you want to pay people fair. And you want to keep the money in Minnesota, not have Texas people paying $10 an hour and having lousy work. So when I heard about that statement, I was appalled and shocked. And the way the meeting was conducted was inappropriate. They took it off to, I think they have indoor plumbing in East Bethel, but they don't apparently have television. And I don't know, and it was on short notice. It's not the way to run a county. It's not the way to respect the working man. It's not the way to respect the quality of workers in Oakland County has tens of thousands of people who do that kind of work, and they're nothing approaching lazy. They're approaching huge equality, and they're worth the pennies they get. The dollars and what they get is well-deserved. And it won't mean much, but on behalf of him, I apologize for that foolish act and the foolish statement. It was inappropriate and wrong. And he knows I think that, but now he knows it.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Abler. Representative Mahoney, briefly, and then we'll
move on. Very briefly, if I said the people of Ramsey were stupid for electing somebody like that, I would have to apologize for that, too. But I wouldn't say something like that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate this. This is, again, another strong panel, another important project. Representative Bernardi, like 10 seconds.
Yeah, 10 seconds. And Mr. Chair and members, prevailing wage would be on these projects, just to let you know.
Okay, important. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
This is an informational hearing, so this bill will be under consideration by this committee for a recommendation to the bonding committee. Members, as the Southwest Corridor panel is assembling, we have minutes from our meeting on March 7th. And Representative Sundin, are you feeling better? Can you move our minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm feeling well enough to move the minutes of the previous meeting.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sundin moves the minutes of our previous meeting on March 7th, or the meeting that we had on March 7th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Members, we went slightly longer than I had anticipated for this important Highway 10 project. So, you know, if people can hang in there, we may just need to go 5 minutes overtime for this. This is a very important project. It's has opponents and supporters here today. I imagine there's opponents and supporters on the committee. I'd like to, what I'd like to do is get through all of the testimony first, and then if we have some time left over, members, we can have some Q&A. So note if you have a question to any of the testifiers, note that. We'll call the testifiers back up for your questions, but people have come to the committee from far and wide, and I'd like to make sure that they're able to provide the committee with testimony. So with that, again, I would ask everybody to be brief as possible. Representative Rosenthal, House File 401 is under consideration by this committee for informational purposes only, and it will be part of our list of projects that we rank and then forward on to the Capital Investment Committee. Welcome to the committee. It's great to see you, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we consider 402 at the same time?
Yes, we can. I imagine they're both sort of together and they're both bonding bills, is my understanding.
That's great. Mr. Chair, members, Representative Metza, just so you know, I'm an honorable ranger, according to Tommy Rukavina. But in all seriousness, I had an opening comment, but I'm just going to keep it brief. This is one of the most important projects in the country. It was one of 11 chosen out of 100. It will provide over 30,000 jobs, and it will relieve congestion on Highway 62, which is massive. It has broad support from the Eden Prairie Chamber of Commerce, City of Edina, City of Eden Prairie, City of Minnetonka, Twin West Chamber of Commerce, City of Minneapolis, City of St. Louis Park, and City of Hopkins. And so with that brief statement, I'll turn it over to the testifiers.
Mr. Shetland.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I have with me Mark Furman, who's our Assistant General Manager at Metro Transit. He is responsible for the Central Corridor and the Southwest Corridor. And what we'd like to provide is just a brief overview of where the project stands today, so then we can get to the testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shetland.
Great, thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Furman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. Mark Furman, Metro Transit. I'm responsible for the Central and Southwest LRT projects. To provide the groundwork for the upcoming witnesses, Mr. Chair, the project is in preliminary engineering as approved by the Federal Transit Administration. Last year, at the end of the year, we completed our public process for our draft environmental impact statement. The community engagement and community responsiveness was massive. We received 996 comments. We have taken those, we have summarized those into 25 key technical issue areas, and now in preliminary engineering, we are reviewing those and looking at adjustments to the alignment as approved initially, and bringing those back out to the community here this spring and summer to recommend those and get final community feedback so that we can then finalize with municipal consent from our five host cities and Hennepin County and complete our preliminary engineering process early 2014.
Thank you, Mr. Furman. So we do have a number of testifiers in support of the project and several in opposition, so we'll just get to them. We'll start with the supporters. You guys can take it in whatever order you want.
Do you want to go first?
The floor is yours.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Commissioner
Chairman.
Kalson, it's so good to see you.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Jan Kalson. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner. My district is the 6th district. It includes the cities of Hopkins, Minnetonka, Northern Third, Eden Prairie, and Edina. Those are all cities either on the route or adjacent to the route, and I appreciate the time you're giving us for this morning. Hennepin County believes this project is crucial to the future of the region. This line will link Minneapolis to the job-rich Southwest metro area, projected to add 60,000 jobs over the next several decades. As we look at our transportation system, we know the answer to job growth, which is a good thing for the state and the region, is a multimodal transportation system, roads and transit. In this corridor, we cannot add enough road capacity to handle the increased traffic that would come with those jobs. We can add light rail, and the studies show that this line will be successful, that it will return its investment many times over, and that it will increase our regional and national competitiveness. You will hear more on these points this morning from other local officials and from the business community. You may also hear that BRT should be built instead. Please be clear that the studies show that LRT is the right choice. In fact, LRT is the only choice to move this project forward and to accomplish these goals. The local units of government are committed to paying their share of the cost. We believe so strongly in Southwest LRT that we are asking the state for only 10%, committing the county's Transit Improvement Board to 30% of the projected construction cost and Hennepin County to 10%. The remaining 50% of the cost would be paid for by the federal government. This is a smart and limited investment by the state of Minnesota. In summary, we are offering to partner with you in enhancing our economic competitiveness and improving our quality of life. And we aren't asking you to do anything more than we are willing to do ourselves. Please support bonding for Southwest LRT. The time is now for this long-awaited project to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Callison. And anyone has questions, we'll have, hopefully the commissioner can stick around for a little while longer. We have the Chambers of Commerce. Welcome back to the committee, council member and Twin West Chamber spokesperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Judy Johnson, Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, and I'm joined by Will Schroer of the Minneapolis and St. Paul Chambers of Commerce. He can introduce himself in a minute. And we're here to testify on behalf of Light Rail Transit, and we appreciate and are very grateful for Representative Rosenthal's bills on this very important project. We've prepared for you a handout, and I'll just go through that briefly. In this corridor, we know that transit really lets our region prosper. It impacts the metro area, and it certainly impacts the state of Minnesota. A lack of transit capacity in this region really does impact negatively job growth in downtown and the suburbs. How we know that is the Twin West Chamber of Commerce for the past 10 years have been working with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on a program called Grow Minnesota. It's a program where we go out and we visit with CEOs, top-level business owners, managers, and say, what are your challenges and your opportunities? And when we go out on these visits in this corridor, we find, unsurprisingly, that transit and transportation is a key issue for our business community because it impacts workers, their ability to get to and from work. It also impacts the transfer of goods and services and people out in the workforce. We also know that when there's congested corridors, it causes businesses to have to reroute and do strange things. It causes time, delays, and impacts to the bottom line, and that's not good for Minnesota's economy. So we do need transit, and that will support job growth. As you will note, in the map that we've provided for you, this corridor links job centers. If you were to just look at the right-of-way that the Regional Rail Authority has for a possible corridor in this area as it was studied, you could follow a different path. You will see, though, at highway just below the Highway 7 Market KTL Drive, this corridor has been adjusted so that it actually goes southward all the way down to Eden Prairie and follows large job centers. And you can see that there will be a high ridership all along this corridor. Downtown Minneapolis, 147,000 jobs all the way through the corridor with tens of thousands of jobs and linking them back and forth. One of the things that we know is that we can't build more roads to get out of congestion in this corridor and to serve the projected job growth in this region. We also know, as Commissioner Callison and officials have stated, all modes were studied in this corridor. In fact, when Twin West got involved about 10 years ago, looking at the opportunities in this corridor to address transit and transportation. We were mode agnostic. We did not have a position on what we thought would be the right mode. We wanted the studies and the numbers and the research to come forward with what would be the best solution, and in this case, it is light rail transit, and that is why it is ranked so high at the federal level and is now one of the top two projects in the nation. We also know that in this quarter, there will be 60,000 more jobs coming, and it's just a matter of how are we going to move people to from work. We also know that we're competing nationally for these funds. They are very precious dollars that we don't take for granted. And we know that if we can bring them back to this region, it will definitely have a positive impact for the entire metro region and the state as it relates to jobs in this corridor and beyond. We have a pie chart for you here, and I want to make one correction. It says under the Federal Transportation Administration's portion, $675 million. That should be corrected to $625 million. Sorry about that. But as you see, and as Commissioner Callison has indicated, everything has been secured except for the state's commitment. And the remaining commitment is actually $118 million because we've already received a bit of funding. So in Representative Rosenthal's bills, you'll see alternatives to do the remaining $118 million or a next phase of $37 million that will get us to another forward step in this very important process. So we're just hoping that the state will then unlock the funds that are needed so that we can leverage all of the other money that is waiting, again, for this top project that's sitting at the federal level. In the good old days that weren't that long ago, the federal share used to be 80% of these projects. It's now 50% of these projects. Our question is, why should we send it to another city? I know my chamber gets calls from regions all across the country saying, you know, how did you guys, you know, move forward with LRT in your area? You know, we know you're at the top of the list, and they're quite frankly picking our brain and trying to find out, you know, what made it so cost effective and how did those rankings rate so favorably. But we don't want to send this money elsewhere, and it will go elsewhere if we don't bring it back to Minnesota. We know that bonding would ensure our place and move this vital project forward. I've also just included for your review when you get some time, just a look at an article that was put out by the three large chambers of commerce, Twin West, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, on our support of this and why, again, it will be very impactful to the metro area. And that is why also beyond the Edina Chamber, the Eden Prairie Chamber, Twin West, we do have Minneapolis and St. Paul who are strong supporters because we look at transit investments from a regional standpoint. It will impact the entire region, and it'll connect our job centers all the way from the Southwest Corridor over to St. Paul and through the U of M as well. We've conducted a couple of polls in the last year, and you can see we did a statewide poll, and then we also tested our questions metro-wide. And one of the things that we know is that a year ago, statewide, 61% of the people responding to the question that you see here said that they are supportive of Southwest Light Rail. We did that study again this past January, and that number has moved up to 70%. And the metro support is even stronger, with 64% metro-wide a year ago, and now 75%. So when we do polling, and I'm sure Representative Rosenthal knows when he was out door-knocking, support is very high, not just in this region, but also beyond. And you'll learn why there's such a strong impact even further out from this region throughout greater Minnesota. And we're proud of that as well. Again, we need this capacity in the Southwest Metro. This is the best way to provide it. Our chamber is a multimodal transportation and transit supporter. We support roads, bridges, buses, opt-outs, BRT, and LRT where and when it makes sense. And in this case, LRT makes sense. Again, it will help serve the 60,000 new jobs that we know will be coming to this corridor. It will provide certainty to people that want to invest in this corridor as it relates to expansions and job growth. And again, it will connect our two large metro cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and beyond through the U of M. And again, we just cannot add enough road capacity in this corridor to get the job done. So with that, I'll stand aside and introduce Will Schroer of the Minneapolis St. Paul Chamber and also stand for questions if you'd have them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Welcome, Mr. Schroer.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, committee members, for the time to share our perspective with you. As Judy said, my name is Will Schroer. I'm the joint employee of the Minneapolis and St. Paul Area Chambers. This is our members' number one legislative priority for the year, and we work very closely with Judy, and therefore her logo is on here as well. And if you haven't heard the joke yet, this is the first time that the three logos have appeared on the same screen without the screen bursting into flames. So just an indication of the importance of this issue to the three largest chambers. Judy, I think, gave a great case for why the Southwest is important to in the immediate region, and particularly to Southwest communities. My job is to very briefly give you a sense, as representing the entire state, of why this is, we believe, important to the entire state as well. The communities that will be served by this investment are among the largest economic generators in this state. And those economic generators are getting to work, our members are getting to work largely through the transit system. 80% of the riders are going to work or getting ready to go to work by taking the metro to the U or to the MCTC or to St. Paul College. It's all kinds of workers. It's entry-level workers. It's professionals, folks at U.S. Bank, Ameriprise, taking the bus to work as well. Judy indicated the need to build on that transit system to continue to recruit. United Health Group is recruiting around the world for the very best, the very brightest, and those folks want to live in a region where they have transportation choices. I'm not super comfortable with the idea that there's only a limited amount of talent. I want all boats to rise, but in the moment, there is, in fact, a limited amount of talent, and I don't know why we should let it go elsewhere. We want to be able to draw that talent to Minneapolis and St. Paul as well. This is a well-known fact. Urban Land Institute, working with its members around the country and, in fact, around the world, understands and is telling its members, if you want to recruit these folks, you better be investing in transit because that's what they're looking for. Other regions know this. I show this map as often as I can because I think it encapsulates what we're up against and, frankly, what your committee needs to help the region work through. This is a two-scale map of all the rail transit in North America. And you can see that whatever community you think is our peer, we're behind them. And whether it's Dallas with the largest light rail system in North America, not driven by any particular political agenda down there, only a desire to put people to work and get them to work, or you pick the peer community, we need to invest to catch up. Denver, for example, not resting on its laurels, they are investing and they are drawing the workers that we want to draw here. They are the number one destination for millennials, and we're number 39. Now, you can quibble with those statistics. Maybe they're number 5 and we're number 20. That's still not where we need to be. And they are under no illusion that folks are coming only for the mountains. If all they had was mountains, they wouldn't be drawing these jobs. They're drawing these jobs because they have mountains and a way to get around, and we need to be there as well. Now, who are they drawing to the region? They're not drawing only the workers. They're drawing the employers that want those workers, the U.S. Patent Office, not with any transit agenda, only with an agenda of hiring good people moving to Denver because of the transit and those employees. Now, the argument that we always put last in our list of arguments is the short-term job creation because we think this is about supporting long-term jobs. Nonetheless, we still have people that want to do good work and are not finding that good work. We did a little addition on our kitchen last year. I felt a little bad. Times are tough. We're spending money on ourselves. Our electrician told us he hadn't worked in 6 months. Super guy. We needed the work done. He wanted to do it. We can put these people to work today. Those jobs go all over. He wanted to do it. We can put these people to work today. Those jobs go all over the state. These are the workers' homes for Central Corridor. They come from all over the state because they have skills. We need those skills. Let's put them to work. We've been asked to be a little brief, so skip that last slide. A region, from a business perspective, is a little bit like a product that we're putting together. And if you don't put the right components in the project, it's not as competitive. We want to be competitive. As Judy said, there's not another component that we can put in this part of the region that will make us, that will serve the needs of the folks we're trying to serve. So we look forward to your help serving those needs and making this region competitive.
Thank you, Mr. Schroyer. Thank you so much. So what I'd like to do in our remaining time, we have two mayors here that I'd like to call up. Nancy Tyra Lukens, Mayor Tyra Lukens, the mayor of Eden Prairie, and Mayor Hovland from Edina. And I want to make sure that James LePray and Candy Aries are here.
Candy
Oh, good. Okay. So if you guys could come up just to save time, we're going to have you right after the mayor's.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nancy Tira Lukens. I'm currently mayor of the city of Eden Prairie. In addition, I've worn the hat of chair of Southwest Transit, which is the bus service, off and on since 1994. And I've also served on the Southwest LRT Policy Advisory Committee and various other committees since 2002. So I've worn a number of hats, and I've become increasingly convinced over the years that we need a balanced transportation system in the Southwest Corridor. Roads and buses are fine, and they do get do help us to deal with some of the congestion. But the burgeoning growth in population that we have and the employment increases that we see for the future really beg the need for a multimodal transportation system across the metro area. And this is particularly true, as previous speakers have alluded to, that if we're going to compete for jobs and for talented creative workers on a national basis, that we really need to have a multimodal system. Increasingly, when I go and talk to businesses within our community, I'm finding not only that their employees come from all over the metro region, all the way up to Little Falls and as far south as Rochester, but I also find that they are having difficulty hiring, especially young people, who increasingly seem to want to be able to take transit to work. They are not interested in having a car. So they are competing with regions that have been mentioned previously that are investing far more than Minnesota is in building more miles of commuter rail, light rail, and rapid transit. Some of these cities are investing via a sales tax 4 to 5 times what our region is. And I think while all of us feel that the start that has been made with Hiawatha and the Central Corridor is wonderful, but it's only part of a system. And in order to function as a whole system, you really need to have the complete system. Stopping investment now would be like building half of a baseball field and thinking that you're still going to be able to play the game. You aren't. You need the entire system. It has been mentioned that UHG is expanding in the Minnetonka-Eden Prairie region. Right now they are building, planning to add about 6,000 jobs into that area. And LRT is a critical component of their plans for moving cars in and out of that new headquarters. It's going to be very critical to do that without congesting nearby roadways that people from all over the region use to get to and from their jobs.
Okay. Mayor, yes. Thank you. I'm running a little short on time.
I will stop now. Okay. I was just going to conclude anyway.
So if you want to conclude, if you have one more sentence or two.
I just want to say please support this project.
Okay. And then so Mayor Hovland, thank you very much, Mayor Tyler Lucas. Mayor Hovland, very briefly, we want to get to some of the people that have some concerns about the project as well.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Committee members, nice to see all of you. Before I start, I just want to briefly apologize to Representative Beard. Last week I was one of the transportation hearings. I forgot to mention that he was also, along with you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart, part of this mileage-based user fee study team, along with me. And you may expect a call from a reporter who has found out that you had one of those devices to track your mileage. So thanks. Forewarned. Forewarned.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. We need a transit system for the 21st century, a transit system that's going to support economic growth. This is an essential part of that system. 15 miles of light rail transit, 17 new stations, projected ridership of 30,000 people by 2030. You heard an allusion to the 24 to 35-year-olds that we're losing out on. We are actually net losers of those young people that we need in our region. And we know from the work that we do at the Regional Council of Mayors and at the Urban Land Institute that we work hand-in-hand with, that they are concerned about being able to only own one car and move around using public transportation. We also know from this new organization that got formed, Greater MSP, which is our new Regional Economic Development Entity, which is a joint partnership between the public and private sectors, funded 70% by private sector, 30% by public sector, that when they talk to site selectors that are coming around the country looking for a place to move businesses to, the first question is, what's your talent pool like? Well, we know what our talent pool is like. I would say we're number one in the country with our talent pool. The second question they ask is, what's your transit system like? Because they want to move workers on transit. And Mayor Lukens, Tyra Lukens, gave a good example of United Healthcare. They're going to have 6,000 more people working out south of Shady Oak Road in Eden Prairie over the next few years. One of the key things that they need is transit. If we're going to have the kind of system that we need that's multimodal in nature, transit has got to be an essential component of it, and we need this for the growth of our region and the health of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Hovland. I'd like to call up now James LaPre, and I don't know if Jamie, I'm sorry. I think we had a typo, and our committee administrator apologizes. So Ms. LaPre and excuse me?
Okay. I was making a joke to an earlier typo.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the committee, and we'll extend the hearing by about 5 minutes, so to make sure that you all have adequate time and that we have at least a couple of questions from committee members if they have them. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Jamie LaPre, and I'm the co-chair of a grassroots nonpartisan neighborhood organization called Safety in the Park. Safety in the Park promotes safety and livability by working with the county, the city, Met Council, and hopefully you to create an alternative solution for the proposed increase in freight traffic on the former Minneapolis Northfield and Southern, or M&S, railroad tracks. We actually welcome the addition of Southwest Light Rail to St. Louis Park and support its implementation. What has not been pointed out this morning and may not be commonly known is that for much of the distance between Eden Prairie and Minneapolis, the SWLRT shares its right-of-way with freight rail. In other words, it's co-located. One of the more unusual aspects of the Southwest LRT is whether or not to remove the freight trains from the Southwest right-of-way beginning in St. Louis Park and or to continue to co-locate freight and light rail into Minneapolis. This proposed M&S freight rail relocation portion of the Southwest LRT is not in the best interest of public safety, railroad operating efficiency, or the conserving of public funds. The Southwest LRT DEIS pointed out that co-location of freight and LRT from St. Louis Park through Minneapolis continues to work as it does in Hopkins. However, in Minneapolis, this co-location becomes unpopular with both the city of Minneapolis and her residents in the Kenwood neighborhood near Lake of the Isles. For what the SWLRT DEIS claims is a mere $23 million more, the freight trains can be moved from the rail tracks built for mainline freight to the M&S with a whistle-free quiet zone being offered as the only mitigation. The M&S was originally built in the early 20th century as an interurban that did not materialize. I can see there's some puzzled faces, but if I can offer a metaphor to easily explain this situation. Imagine the traffic from an interstate being rerouted past onto your residential street and the drivers being told they can't honk their horns. For more than 3 years, Safety in the Park has been working with rail experts to educate our elected officials about the dangers of 100-plus rail cars traveling up a ramp for a 30-foot grade change, across a curving bridge, through a series of aggressive reversing curves, across six grade-level crossings, and within 35 feet of St. Louis Park's high school student parking lot. That's less than the distance of a single rail car. Finally, it goes back down a curving ramp to lose the grade that it had to gain. Unfortunately, no government study has seriously looked at the safety risks associated with the reroute. The DEIS responses of the Canadian Pacific Railroad, the Twin City and Western Railroad, and Mr. Tom Johnson, PE of Railroad and Metallurgical Engineering, do what our elected officials should have done. They emphatically point out that the safety and economic problems with rerouting 100-plus car freight trains from mainline track to the M&S. For example, the Canadian Pacific, who owns the tracks, refuses to accept the cost of the maintenance of the interconnect structures for cost and safety reasons. The Twin City and Western Railroad states the design of the reroute fails to meet recognized standards of engineering safety and that all guiding specifications of design guidelines have been violated by this proposed plan. They go on to say that it creates risks of derailment, severe safety risks for the residents of St. Louis Park, and will generate intense train noise. And finally, Mr. Johnson points out that unless the aggressive curves are removed from the reroute line, the route will never be safe. This is what is publicly known at this point. Co-location of freight and light rail is possible and can probably be done within the $1.25 billion budget. The railroads, because of federal interstate commerce laws, have veto power over any proposal. In fact, the Met Council can build the new interconnect and the railroads can refuse to use it. This project could become a bridge to nowhere. The design of the reroute that is acceptable to the railroads looks nothing like the reroute design in the DEIS. Any acceptable design will have to be built with, but not limited to, less severe grade changes, gentler curves, longer sight lines, safer crossings. To accommodate the railroads, there will have to be more impact on businesses, homes, wetlands, and other vulnerable environment in St. Louis Park. $23 million will not cover the cost of rerouting the freight, and that does not include any mitigation money for the school district of St. Louis Park or the city of St. Louis Park. How has the Met Council said they will pay for this? Met Council stated in public meetings that the expense of the reroute will be covered by Southwest contingency money. However, they don't explain what will happen when real contingencies develop. Also, since the railroad does not want to maintain the new bridge and the ramp of the infrastructure, it's unclear who will pay for the upkeep of this expensive project. Will the maintenance of the freight rail reroute become part of the operating costs of the LRT? Cynics in my neighborhood wonder if the Met Council is just going to bull their way into the project and then say, we've spent X million dollars, now we need more money. I'd like to think that the cynics are wrong, but what I do know is that continuing to push the freight rail reroute is fiscally irresponsible. Not only can Southwest be built without the relocation of freight trains, but it can also be built in a way that is safer to the public, more efficient for the railroads, and less costly to taxpayers. As much as I look forward to Southwest Light Rail and St. Louis Park, I have come here today to ask you to withhold funding for the Southwest Light Rail project unless you stipulate that the proposed reroute portion be dropped from the project. One last thing. Safety in the Park is hosting a walking tour for the Met Council this weekend. And if any of you would like to see the restraints that are part of the M&S line, we'd like to invite you to join us on our walking tour. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. LePre. And as I mentioned, members, we're just going to extend for 5 minutes so we can give, I believe it's Karen Toma here, and Candy Aries a chance to testify. And members, I know there's probably questions, but this is not the end of the discussion of the Southwest Light Rail before this committee and before the legislature. So there'll be a couple of more opportunities, obviously, to debate this issue and to ask others questions. We're going to have a big transit bill next week that we're going to hear Representative Hortman's bill, and I imagine this will be a topic in the broader transportation finance bill that we'll be marking up the first week of April. So I just wanted to let members of the committee know that if you have questions to hold them, there'll be plenty of opportunity to discuss this. I just wanted to make sure all of the people that travel here today have a chance to testify before the committee. So if Ms. Roma and Ms. Aries, I'll give you about 5-6 minutes between you if that's okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Karen Roma. I was a PMT member for my neighborhood on this issue. And for full disclosure, the reason I kind of became part of this issue is because my home resides on the tracks. But I'm not naive. I know big projects will impact some people in negative ways. My passion for this issue has been fueled by the deliberate and consistent attempts from the Met Council and Hennepin County to hide the real costs and real problems that this reroute is going to cause the project. I'm not arguing against the benefits of Southwest Light Rail. what I am here to talk about is that the 50% of the federal funding, it's not just waiting. I think I heard that word. It's not just waiting for you. There's some things that are going to eventually come to light that may stop the federal government from funding. So the reason why this reroute maybe it isn't familiar to you, Hennepin County has kind of deliberately tried to keep it outside of Southwest Light Rail since its scoping period back in 2008. So what that meant, from 2008 up until the DEIS came out, there was 57 open houses where the public was able to give their input. At all 57 of those community outreach, if anyone had any questions about this reroute, they were told it was a separate issue. The City of St. Louis Park, this City of St. Louis Park School Board, Hennepin County, let's talk about this issue. They were always told that it was separate. In September of 2011, the FTA got wind of this project and demanded that the reroute be included as part of the overall scope of the project. So since then, it was included in the DEIS. The first public opportunity for the public to speak happened at one of the three open houses that was held for the DEIS. At that open house, about 200 residents from St. Louis Park protested this idea of the reroute. More importantly, what I think you all should really know about what you have in front of you is the list of the TCW comments. If anything, if you just read the second page, their bullet points, I think it highlights some of their concerns. But what you need to know about is how much power the TCW really has. And I just want to give you a brief lesson on...
Yeah, very briefly, because we still have Ms. Aries.
I'll get there. Surface Transportation Board works. The Surface Transportation Board will have to approve the reroute. They basically will have to say, okay, you can kick the current railroad out of their current trackage rights. That just does not happen. I am encouraging you to just do a little bit of research, call the Surface Transportation Board. I've got a number, Gabe Meyer, 202-245-0150. He'll really give you a good understanding of that the TCW does have the law behind them. And in the end, either this project is going to cost about twice as much as what they're proposing, or it's not going to go anywhere at all. So again, I'm asking not to never fund Southwest Light Rail, but just to wait until this issue is resolved. Wait until there's some indication that this is something that will work for the City of St. Louis Park and the railroad company, because this $118 million or the $36 million that's on the table here literally can be the kind of train to nowhere.
Thank you very much, Ms. Roma. And then our last testifier is Ms. Aries. So please state your name and title for the record.
Hello. My name is Candy Aries. I have been working with Safety in the Park, and right now I am the representative for Safety in the Park on the Southwest LRT Community Advisory Committee. I'm also here to state that I have concerns about the freight rail reroute. I have concerns about how it's going to impact the St. Louis Park. And I am also, along with Karen, I'm also skeptic that the issue of the freight is really truly being handled in a good manner, a forthright manner, by the Met Council and the Hennepin County. I have a number of examples. The first would be how the freight rail issue has been handled in the past. Again, it's critical to note that the issue for the St. Louis Park residents and the councils were issues that were brought up during the LPA and the LPA selection scoping. And it was at that time that the county continued to refuse to discuss the freight, insisting that it was a separate issue. Now that the FTA has made it part of the project, that brings it more into our ability to give feedback on it. However, I would be concerned about the history of the refusal and how it's led us to where we're at right now. I'm also concerned. It's been 18 months since September of 2011 when the FDA gave permission to go into PE, and yet I still do not believe that the Met Council is following the directive in the spirit of including this freight rail issue in their scope. In addition to this, and this is part of why I believe that, I would like to describe how the impacts for the freight rail reroute was included in the draft environmental impact.
Ms. Arias, if you could just do that in a minute or two, that would be great, because we're way over time already in our committee. But we want to hear from you, so if you could just, we'll give you a couple more minutes to finish up.
I would just like to say that the impacts and the impacts that were discussed in this draft environmental impact statement, these are the same studies, the same information that was appealed by the city of St. Louis Park. This is the same information that was appealed by a group of residents because they found the analysis to be inaccurate and flawed. So it seems really difficult to understand how the project team can take this information that has existing concerns and just simply insert this into a different document for a different project. I would just like to finish with saying that this process is just ripe for lawsuits. It's ripe for issues with the FTA and federal agencies. I support the Southwest LRT, but I think that if we don't get this issue about the freight resolved, it's possibly money that's spent that goes nowhere. So I would recommend that we withhold funding until that point.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. I wanted to thank both the proponents and the people that have concerns, because you're not necessarily opponents, but you have concerns about this project, for coming. And as I said, we are going to have continued conversation in this committee. If the three of you don't know Mr. Shear already, you should get his name and number, and he will inform you of everything that we're doing related to this issue. So that if you want to show up, you can, and continue to testify. And if you wanted to repeat, Ms. Lepre, if you have is there a specific time and location that people are gathering on Saturday, if you wanted to let people know further about the activity that you're doing?
Yes, the walking tour will be at noon on this Saturday. We're meeting at the St. Louis Park Municipal Parking Lot that's at the corner of Wooddale Avenue and 36th Street.
Okay.
And it'll take an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay. All right. Again, everybody, thank you very much. And thank you, committee members, for indulging us in a longer than usual hearing. But we had a lot of important bills to discuss today. We'll see you tomorrow, 10 o'clock here. This meeting's adjourned.